welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of science fiction. Later on, it's Beyond Tomorrow, with a story from Robert Heinlein. But first, it's X-1, with the tale Cold Equations, heard on NBC on the 25th of August, 1955.
Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds.
X minus one.
Tonight's story, Cold Equations.
There is no margin of safety along the rim of a frontier. There can't be any until the way is made for those who come later. Until then, the penalty for mistakes is a grim one. The laws of physical nature operate with irrevocable certainty, with no room for mercy, kindness, or sentimentality. In space, life becomes a cold equation, and the equal sign is often followed by death. I know. I'm the pilot of an EDS.
Come in.
You sent for me, Commander?
Yes. Sit down, Barton. We just got an ED from the Territorial Space Station on Woden.
Woden, that's in the Crab Nebula, isn't it?
That's right. There are two exploration parties there on Manning's continent. 8 men each.
Mm-hmm.
They've got calla fever in one of them and no serum.
Oh, and I thought this was going to be a nice, quiet passenger run.
Computers are working out your payload and your course right now. In exactly 10 minutes, we'll drop in a normal space and launch your ship.
I'll get her ready.
One thing.
What's that?
Woden is at the maximum pay limit for an EDS. Figuring the weight of the serum, we'll be able to give you just enough fuel to land on Manning's continent if you make it the first pass. Otherwise, you'll burn out in midair.
Mm-hmm. Standard procedure.
Report to launching control.
Right.
Good luck, Barton.
Thanks. Oh, by the way.
Yes?
When can I expect to be picked up?
We'll make a stop on the run back to Earth sometime next year. You'll be notified by radio.
Okay.
Sorry we can't make it sooner.
That's what happens when you sign on for EDS work. I'll see you next year, Commander. Down in the belly of the Stardust, the crew was working like beavers to get the EDS, the emergency dispatch ship, ready. Mechanics and technicians were swarming all over the place. Girls in inspector's uniforms were checking the gauges in the supply cabinet. 9 minutes later, the exact course was in the computer. The serum was stowed in my supply cabinet closet, and little EDS 4G3 was ready to be borne into space.
Martin?
Yes, sir?
30 seconds to blastoff. All set?
All set.
I'm turning you over to traffic.
Ready.
Traffic control. Come in, EDS 4G3.
Ready.
20 seconds. Lock open. 15 seconds. Space drive on.
Space drive on.
10 seconds. Gravity neutralizer on.
Neutralizer on.
5 seconds. 4, 3... 2, 1, blast off!
I don't remember how long it was afterwards that I first noticed something wrong. Maybe an hour, maybe two. There was nothing to show it except the needle and the heat gauge. It was on zero when we left the Stardust, and now I noticed that it had crept up toward the 30 mark. That meant something inside the ship was radiating heat. That something was in the supply closet, and it was alive. All right. Come out. whoever or whatever you are, if you don't come out in 5 seconds, I'm going to blast you. One. Two. Well, I'll be...
Hello. I'm Marilyn Lee Cross.
What are you doing in there?
I'm a stowaway.
Oh, my...
What's the matter? Do I have to pay a fine or something?
What are you doing here?
I wanted to see my husband.
Who's your husband?
He's with the government survey crew on Woden. I haven't seen him since he left Earth 4 years ago.
Okay. But what made you hide in my EDS?
I have a job waiting for me on Mimir. But I heard you were going to Woden, and there was plenty of room, so I hid. Oh, I knew I'd be breaking some kind of rule, but what one little rule?
What's one little rule? H amount of fuel will power an EDS with a mass of M safely to its destination. H amount of fuel will not power an EDS with a mass of M plus X safely to its destination. Well, how could she be expected to know? She was 5'2 with brown curly hair and the faint sweet smell of perfume. She was 5'2 and she smelled like apple blossoms. And her name was X in an equation that would have to be balanced.
Come in, EDS. Come in.
This is Barton, emergency dispatch pilot, 4G3.
Go ahead.
Give me Commander Delhart.
What's the message, EDS?
I have to consult Commander Delhart.
The commander is busy.
Listen, you squirt. Give me Commander Delhart.
One moment, 4G3. Commander Delhart, emergency message from EDS, 4G3.
This is Delhart. What is it?
At 0800 hours, I discovered a stowaway aboard my ship.
A stowaway?
Yes, sir.
Well, have you notified ship's records?
Not yet, sir.
You know the regulations as well as I do.
Of course I know the regulations. That's why I'm calling.
Martin, what's going on?
Sir, this is a girl. A young woman.
Oh.
She wanted to see her husband on Woden. She didn't know what she was doing.
I see.
I wondered, sir... Maybe the cruiser could change course or something?
I'm afraid not. We're hundreds of light years apart now. We have a limited fuel supply ourselves with 900 passengers.
Is there any chance?
No.
Okay, Skipper.
Better get the information to ship's records.
Okay.
Martin.
Skipper.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Cut our acceleration, didn't you?
Yes.
Why?
Oh, well, save fuel. For a while. How did you manage to stow away?
Well, I was taking a language lesson in Mimiris from a girl in the inspection corps. The order came in for your trip, and I just went along on an impulse. It was easy. I'll be a model prisoner, I promise.
Oh, if you were only a thief or a spy, it would make it easier.
Make what easier?
Forget it. Why couldn't she have been somebody with some ulterior motive, a fugitive, hoping to lose himself in a raw new world, a crackpot with a mission? Why did she have to be a woman? A beautiful, kind, trusting woman.
Stardust.
Barton, EDS, 4G3.
Go ahead, 4G3. Identify a stowaway.
Give me your identification disc, Miss Cross.
Here. Why?
Well, it's for ship's records. Identification number T8374.
One moment. This is for the gray card, of course.
Yes.
Well, I'll need the time of...
I'll tell you later.
That's highly irregular.
And we'll do it in a highly irregular manner. The subject is a young woman. She's listening to everything that's said. Are you capable of understanding that?
Oh. Go ahead, 4G3.
Number T8374-Y54. Name, Marilyn Lee Cross. Female, married. Born July 7th, 2160. Good Lord, you're only a child. Height 5 feet 2 inches, weight 110, hair brown, eyes blue, complexion light, blood type O, original destination Port City, Mimir. Listen, I'll call you back later. Look, miss.
Marilyn.
Look, Marilyn. I guess you don't know what you got yourself into here. Well, it's like this. This ship is carrying Calla fever serum to the survey group on Woden.
Yes.
Their supply was wrecked in a tornado. The fever is always fatal unless the serum is given in the first 48 hours. Now, these little ships have exactly enough fuel to reach their destination. If you stay aboard her, your added weight will cause it to use up all its fuel before it can land.
What happens then?
We crash. You die, I die, and 6 fever victims on Woden die.
Well, can't they send out another ship to meet us?
There are no ships to send.
Well, I... Oh, no, you couldn't do that.
That's how it has to be.
But that's crazy. I haven't done anything. I haven't hurt anybody.
I'm sorry. I should have told you before, but I wanted to make sure there was no other way.
You mean it? You're going to make me leave this ship?
That's how it is.
But I'll die. I'll explode. I'll be like those horrible pictures about...
Try to understand.
I do understand. You're going to kill me, and I didn't do anything.
I know you didn't. I know you didn't. That has nothing to do with it.
It has everything to do with it. Nobody just dies like that for no reason. Oh, listen. Maybe there are other cruisers. Cruisers you don't know about. Maybe the radio. Maybe it's...
Now, listen to me. It's different here. Different from anything you've ever known. On Woden, there are 16 men. 16 men on an entire world. They're fighting. Fighting an alien environment. The environment fights back. You can only make a mistake once.
And I made a mistake.
Yes.
There's no hope.
Absolutely none. You'll have to be put out of the ship. It was better so. With the going of all hope would go the fear. Then would come the resignation. She needed time, and there was so little.
EDS. Starship to EDS. Need Burton and Dallas.
All right, Starship.
When do you expect to complete your report?
I need a computer check.
I'll give you statistics. Statistics.
This is EDS 4G3. I'm intersecting course vector 7.3 at 0831. Deceleration 1750, weight 1 ton. I would like to stay at point 10 as long as the computers allow. Will you give them the question?
Jack, I'll call you back.
We wouldn't have long to wait. The new factors would be fed into the steel maw of the computer bank, and the electrical impulses would go through the complex circuits. Here and there, a relay would click. A tiny cog turn over. But it would be the current, formless, mindless, invisible, which would determine with utter precision how long the pale young girl beside me would live. 5 little segments of metal in the second bank would trip against an inked ribbon, and the machine would spit out the answer.
You will resume deceleration at 1910.
It was 1810 when he spoke. 1 hour. She has 1 hour to live. That's it.
All I did was hide in a closet. And now you tell me I have to die. I don't believe it.
You might as well get used to it.
If this happened back on Earth, 1,000 ships would fill the sky. The whole world would know about it. They'd do everything to save me.
This isn't Earth.
It was such a big dream. Jerry and I separated almost 5 years ago. We were too young. And I was going to see him to... try to make everything all right again. Are you married?
I was.
Oh?
She ran off with some guy in the weather service.
Do you still think about it?
I don't let myself.
Where is she?
Back on Earth. Look, if you don't mind, I'd just as soon talk about something else.
Okay. What do you do when you've got an hour to live? What do you talk about?
What's Jerry like?
Jerry? Oh, he's a funny guy. When he found out, I mean about the other fella, he didn't get mad. He cried. That was all he felt, sadness.
So you walked all over him?
Oh, I thought I wanted him to get mad at me, to be jealous.
And now?
I've been thinking about him for 5 years. So when I heard the ship was bound for Woden and I knew Jerry was there, I stowed away. I didn't know about the fuel. I didn't know this would happen to me.
She had violated a man-made law that said keep out. The penalty was not of man's making or desire. It was not a penalty men could revoke. H amount of fuel will power an EDS with a mass of M safely to its destination. The time was 18:30. 40 minutes. It was beginning to get me. A space frontier is a rough place, and I'd seen 100 men die since I left Earth. But this was different. I watched her as she wrote a message to her folks. I watched her as she fought her way through the black horror of fear toward the calm gray of acceptance. And then there it was on the view screen. The planet Woden. A red ball enshrouded in the blue haze of its atmosphere, swimming in space against the background of star-sprinkled blackness. The chronometer on the instrument panel said 18:45. Listen, we're in radio range of Woden now. I mean, would you want me to try to contact your husband?
Jerry?
It'd mean he would know you're going to die. There'd be nothing anyone can do.
Yes. I would like to talk to him. Do you think we can?
Well, the planet is turning. If his group is on the side facing us, we might be able to reach him.
I'll try.
All right. Hello. Hello, Woden. EDS to Government Survey Group. Can you hear me? Come in, Woden. They may not be monitoring.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Identify yourself, please.
This is Government Survey Group 1 on planet Woden.
This is John Barton, EDS pilot.
Do you have the serum?
Yes. How bad is it?
One man died last night. 6 have the fever. How long will it take to...
I start deceleration at 1910 hours. I should be able to land at 1930.
Thank God.
Look, do you have a Gerald Cross in charge of the group?
Commander Cross? Yes, we do.
Could I speak to him?
He isn't here. He's out with the survey team.
Well, when do you expect him?
Can't say.
How do you read me? How much time do we have left for communication?
Less than 15 minutes.
All right. If Commander Cross comes back before we lose radio contact, will you have him buzz me? It's important.
Okay, EDS.
I'll keep the set open.
Check.
The minutes passed like small bits of eternity. On the view screen, I could see Manning's continent sprawled like a gigantic hourglass in the eastern sea. There was a thin line of shadow where it was beginning to disappear as the planet turned on its axis. I looked at the pale woman next to me, and I thought of another woman long ago who'd sat next to me and cried because I wouldn't try to understand. What had she written in those letters back home? What would they think of the faceless, unknown pilot who'd sent her to her death? What would I think of myself alone nights, reliving this voyage?
Cold, isn't it?
I'll turn up the thermostat.
Nothing from Jerry?
We have about 2 minutes of radio contact left.
Maybe it's better. I mean, suppose it were you and your wife tried to call you. How would you feel?
I don't know.
Do you ever hear from her?
I got a letter about a year ago. I tore it up.
That was foolish.
Yeah, it was.
Life is so terribly short to be wandering around alone.
Well, I... Wait a second. We're getting something.
How much time before I have to leave the ship?
About 10 minutes.
Hello, EDS. Hello, EDS. Come in. Come in.
EDS.
This is Walton. I have command across.
All right, go ahead.
Hello. This is command across.
Jerry Cross?
Yes.
I have someone for you. Go ahead.
Hello.
Jerry?
Hello?
Jerry.
Who is it?
It's me, Marilyn.
Marilyn?
I wanted to see you again. I stowed away on the EDS.
You what? But Marilyn...
It doesn't matter, Jerry. All that matters is that I can tell you all the things I've kept inside for so long. Jerry, I want you to know I've never forgotten.
Oh, it's been so many years, I can't believe it.
I thought I'd see you again, but... No, I can't. Jerry, you don't hate me, do you?
Hate you? Oh, Marilyn, I've never stopped loving you. Not for an instant.
Oh, Jerry.
Listen, we don't have much time. The transmission is getting fuzzy. Oh, Marilyn, I've got to see you. There's got to be some way.
But there isn't.
Let me talk to the pilot.
Let me... Hello?
Pilot, have you called the mothership? Did you have them checked with the computers?
I've done everything. You've been on the frontier long enough to know the setup in an EDS.
Some way.
You think I'd let this happen if I wasn't sure?
He tried to help me, Jerry. He tried. And it really doesn't matter. I'm not frightened anymore. Not now.
But how did you get here? I don't understand.
Well, I was going to Mimir to take a job, I thought. And now I realize I was just going because I'd be closer to where you were. Oh, Jerry, all this time...
No. Let me tell you something. Marilyn, I've always known you'd come back to me. I've known it every minute. What's kept me alive. I want you to hold that in your mind.
Jerry, I can't hear you.
We haven't much time. We're losing radio contact.
Jerry!
Oh, don't cry, darling. Just know how I feel.
I do.
It's fading.
There are so many things to say. Jerry, if you can still hear me, maybe I'll come to see you again. Maybe I'll come to you in your dreams. Or be the touch of a breeze or one of those golden-winged little birds singing my silly head off. Maybe I'll be nothing you can see or hear, but you'll know I'm there. Think of me like that, Jerry. Goodbye.
Goodbye, my darling.
She sat motionless in the hush that followed. And then she looked at me.
Now?
Now. I pulled down the black lever, and the inner door of the lock slid open. She walked with her head up and the brown curls brushing her shoulders. I let her do it alone. She stepped into the lock and turned to face me, and I could see the pulse in her throat.
I'm ready.
I pulled the red lever, and there was a slight waver as the air gushed out. I thought I sensed a bump, as if something had bumped the outer door. And then there was nothing. The white hand of the closet temperature control was back at zero. A cold equation had been balanced, and I was alone in the ship.
Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Cold Equations, written by Tom Godwin and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Court Benson as Barton, Jay Meredith as Marilyn, Milo Bolton as Commander Delhart.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from the 25th of August, 1955. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, in the scope of radio's yesteryear, there weren't too many science fiction shows or stories featured on air, and this next broadcast poses an interesting question for old-time radio collectors and fans. The program is called Beyond Tomorrow and was supposed to be CBS's first foray into science fiction on radio. But aside from scattered newspaper listings and only three recordings of the series surviving today, some speculate that the show was just an audition experiment and actually never had a regular run on air. In this first recording from the series, Robert Heinlein's story Requiem, which was first published in Astounding Science Fiction magazine in August of 1940, is featured. a CBS episode from April 5th, 1950.
Now for tonight's story, let's go beyond tomorrow. Beyond tomorrow, next month, next decade, next century, when we will still be housewives and farmers and merchants, when some of us will be broke and some of us will be ambitious, and some of us will be lonely as people are today, but when we will employ robots to do our housework and go for a weekend to the moon. Beyond tomorrow, science fiction stories about us and our children in the days that are soon to come. Tonight, based on a famous story by Robert Heinlein and adapted by Robert Sennadella, the story of a man who lived for a dream.
All right, everybody, all right. Right this way to the rocket. Yes, sir, ladies and gentlemen, this machine is the very same type of machine used by the first men to reach the moon. You can step inside and take a look for only 25 cents. But you've got to hurry, 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 because the captain's going to take off for the stratosphere in about 5 minutes. Come on, see the rocket that made a flight to the moon. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
What are you looking at, Sonny?
That rocket. What'd you think?
You like rockets?
I'm going to be a rocket pilot someday. I'm going to be a pilot on the moon run.
Ever been inside one?
No.
Well, I'll take you inside this one if you can tell me what company operates the moon run.
Oh, everybody knows that. The Harrison Moon Rocket Company, of course.
Right. Come on.
Oh, gee whiz.
Okay, right up the gangplank,
two tickets, please.
Okay, sir. Who else wants to see the inside of the rocket that made a flight to the moon? Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Here we are, Sonny. Well, what do you think of it?
Gee, look at that instrument board.
Yes, you see this semicircle of dials? Well, this dial tells you the velocity. And here's one for the air density inside the ship, and...
I know. And this one's for the air density outside the ship. And this one measures the gravitational pull.
I guess we're just a couple of fans, eh, Sonny?
Say, mister, you ever been to the moon?
No. No, I haven't.
Sorry, sir.
Yes, Captain?
You and the boy will have to leave now. We've got to cast loose for the flight.
Oh, gee.
Oh, you run along, Sonny. I want to talk to the captain.
Well, okay. So long. And thanks, mister.
Good luck to you, my boy. Captain.
Yeah?
How far up do you go on this flight?
Not far, just about 1,000 miles. We do it twice a day. Crowd likes it. We're out of sight in 4 3/10 seconds. How they go for that takeoff.
Ever take passengers?
Got $25?
Yes.
We take passengers.
Good.
I'll have the doc come in and give you a checkup.
Oh, no.
What's the matter?
Nothing. If you're in a hurry, I thought that maybe we could dispense.
Not a chance. Want me to lose my license? Hey, Doc.
Yeah?
Doc, come in here a minute.
Be right there.
Well, all right.
Standard procedure. It'll be over in a jiffy. Take off your jacket.
All right.
Do you want me, Mac?
Gentleman here wants to take flight.
All right, sir. Roll up your sleeves, please.
There you are.
All right. Let's test your blood pressure. Uh-huh. How old are you, sir?
68.
You don't mean 70.
68?
All right. But it's no go anyway.
You mean you won't take me?
I couldn't even guarantee that you'd live through the takeoff. You see, sir, it's not only that your blood pressure is high. I bet you have a heart condition, too. But at your age...
I'm 60.
Well, let's say 60. Even at 60, bones are brittle, highly calcified, easily broken in the shock of takeoff. Rocketry, sir, is
a
young
man's game. I know.
Sorry, sir, I'd like to take you, but...
Oh, well, it's all right. I rather expected it. But, Captain, could you and your engineer have dinner with me at the fairgrounds restaurant after your flight?
Well, we'll be hungry.
Good. I'll be waiting for you.
Hiya, mister.
Huh? Oh, hello, Sonny.
Gee, you stayed in there so long. I thought she was gone with him.
No. Not this time, Sonny. More coffee, Captain McIntyre?
Thank you.
Smoke a cigar, Mr. Cummings?
Don't mind if I do.
Ah, here you are.
Boy, a Corona Corona.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, so you quit the moon run, Captain. Why?
I didn't like it.
Oh, I can't believe that. You're a rocket man.
Tell him the truth, Mac. It was Rule G that got you.
Oh, Rule G, eh? You still drink?
No, but they don't give you a second chance.
How about you, Mr. Cummings? How is it you're not on the moon run anymore?
Oh, I smuggled a beautiful blue rock back to Earth for a girl I know. Boy, I wish I hadn't. I could be in Luna City tonight. Ha. Now, there's a town.
How about you, Captain? Would you like to be back in Luna City?
Why are you asking us all this, Mr. Harrison?
Oh, I've got my reasons. Did you like it on the moon?
The moon's the only place for a young fellow, Mr. Harrison. It's still undeveloped compared with what it's going to be. It's just opening up. It's the frontier all over again.
I might be able to get you boys back there.
What?
What do you mean?
Look, I want to get to the moon myself. And frankly, I need a couple of boys like you to take me. Fellas who know the ropes.
Well, what's the matter with getting an excursion permit and going in a company ship?
He can't pass a physical exam, Charlie.
Well, I know, but if you can afford to hire us, Mr. Harrison, why don't you just bribe a company doctor? It's been done before.
No, no, it won't work for me. I'm a little too prominent.
Say, you're not...
My name is Delos D. Harrison.
You're D.D. Harrison himself.
I thought so.
Well, gosh, sir, you... You own most of the company yourself. You ought to be able to do anything you like, rules or no rules.
No, no, that's not true. I'm a good deal less free than you are.
What? But holy...
Well, I tried to do what you suggest, but the other directors wouldn't permit it. They're afraid of losing their franchise.
You've never been to the moon?
No.
Say, this is really tough. Why, if it hadn't been for you, none of us had ever got there. And you can't go.
Not legally. But if I find a ship, are you boys game to take me?
Sure we are.
Now, wait a minute. I think we better have more details.
All right, fair enough. Now, you'll have to buy the ship for me. If I did it openly, everybody would figure out what I meant to do and stop me.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll supply you with all the cash you need. You go out and locate some sort of ship that can be refitted for the trip.
Look, Mr. Harrison, why do you want to go to the moon so badly?
Well, I don't know whether I can explain it to you or not. It's the one thing I've wanted to do all my life. When I was a kid, practically nobody believed that men would ever reach the moon. They laughed at the idea. But I believed. I read Verne and Wells and Smith, and I set my heart on being one of the men to walk the surface of the moon, to see her other side, and to look back on the face of the earth hanging in the sky. Captain McIntyre, Mr. Cummings, I've lived longer than I should, but I don't want to die until I've set foot on the moon.
You get hold of that money, Mr. Harrison. We'll take you to the moon.
But, Mr. Harrison...
You heard me, Belden. Sell 'em. I want every share of stock I own realized in cash as rapidly as possible. Spaceways, Spaceways Provisioning Company, Artemis Mines, Lunar City Recreations, the whole lot of them. Sell 'em all.
Hello.
Jason, this is Belden.
Oh, hello, Belden.
I'm calling you because your uncle gave me a rather peculiar order today.
Really? What was it?
Well, now I work for your uncle, Jason. I shouldn't be calling you. It's just that I hate to see your inheritance endangered.
What? Say, what's going on?
Well, now, I'm not supposed to tell you. I wouldn't... want you to forget me in case...
Well, I understand you perfectly, Belden. You'll be taken care of. What's the old man doing?
He's ordered me to sell all his stock. He's converting everything into cash.
Belden, I won't forget this. Thank you. I'll see my lawyer right away.
And so, Your Honor, we contend that Mr. Harrison's conduct gives clear indication that a mind once brilliant has become senile. We therefore pray this honorable court to declare Mr. Harrison incompetent and to assign a conservator to protect his financial interests and the financial interests of his heir, Mr. Jason Harrison. That is all.
Has Mr. Dallas Harrison's attorney any closing argument?
Only this, Your Honor. My client has the right to enjoy his wealth in whatever manner best suits him for the few remaining years of his life. We pray that this court will confirm our opinion that my client has this right. I thank you.
Mr. Cummins, this court has as high a regard for individual liberty as you have. But it must be admitted that in selling his holdings and demanding cash, Mr. Dallas Harrison has acted in an eccentric manner. The court cannot overlook the fact that men do grow old. Yes, men do become senile. And in such cases must be protected. I shall take this matter under advisement until tomorrow. Court is adjourned.
Extra, extra, millionaire disappears. D.D. Harrison missing.
It's awful, Jason, but I couldn't have foreseen it.
I don't suppose so, Belden.
He must have gone to court yesterday with that money in his pocket. When he saw that the judge would decide against him, he decided not to stick around for the verdict.
He took everything?
Everything.
We've got to find him.
Well, the police are working on it.
Well, you've got to help them.
How?
Well, figure out where he went.
Well, I don't know where he went.
You're the only one who can find out. Go through his papers. Look for clues. Well, look for hiding places. Examine everything. Letters, bills, scratch pads, diaries, everything. Find a clue, report to me. It's up to you to dig up the leads, Belden. We've got to find that old man before he spends all my money.
Hey, this ham gravy's good.
Charlie, you'd rather eat than anything, Mr. Harrison.
That's a libel on the girls in Nona City, Max.
I've had a pretty good appetite myself since I joined you boys.
Desert air.
Exercise.
No. I don't think a man's health depends so much on what he does as on whether he wants to do it. I feel good because I'm doing what I want to do.
That's all a man can ask of life.
Say, Mr. Harrison.
Yes?
How does a guy go about getting rich? Like you did.
Oh, I don't know, Charlie. I never tried to get rich. I never wanted to be rich or well-known or anything like that.
Ah, you wouldn't kid me, would you?
No. I just wanted to live a long time and see it all happen. Oh, I wasn't unusual. There were lots of boys like me. Radio hams there were, and telescope builders and airplane amateurs. We had science clubs and basement laboratories and science fiction leagues. No, I didn't want to be rich. I just wanted to live long enough to see men rise up to the stars. And if God was good to me, to go as far as the moon myself. It's been a good life. I haven't any complaints.
There's the moon up there. Look at it.
The moon.
We'll be there in a day or two.
See, Mac.
Yeah?
As far as you're concerned, you're ready to go now, is that right?
That's right.
Well, then, we're just waiting for your calibration runs and pre-flight tests, eh, Charlie?
Well, say, I might run them tonight.
Now, that's what I was getting at, can you?
Well, sure, why not? If Mac will help, eh?
I'll help you.
We'll all help. With luck, we can take off tomorrow.
Come on, boys, let's go. Let's get that.
Catch him, Mac.
Mr. Harrison, he's out. Come on, Charlie. Let's get him into his tent.
Right.
Yeah.
Easy now.
Easy does it. There.
Where's his medicine?
In his vest pocket. All right, better.
Break that capsule. Hold it under his nose.
Right.
He's breathing better. We won't go tomorrow. We've got to wait until he's back to normal.
Look,
Can we leave him for a sec, Mac?
I think so.
Come outside for a minute, then.
Okay. What is it?
Mac, we're not going through with this.
Why not?
It's murder. He'll never stand up under the initial acceleration. The takeoff will kill him.
It's what he wants to do.
Well, we can't let him.
Why not?
Why not? Because he's such a swell old duck, Mac.
Okay, what do you want to do with him? Send him back? Let the court put him away in a bug house? Let him dress in a bathrobe and sit in a wheelchair in a sanitarium till he dies of a broken heart?
No, I don't want that.
Okay, get out to the hangar and make your setup for those test runs. I'll be along.
Hello.
Jason, Eldon speaking. I've got something.
Yes, what is it?
He had it in a strong box. It's a deed. A deed to a piece of land in Arizona, 6 acres. Apparently, from the description, this is desert land.
When did he buy it?
He didn't. The two men named James McIntyre and Charles Cummings bought it a month ago. It looks as if what he
did... I know what it looks as if. Good work, Eldon. Now get out there right away and stop him. Stop him at all costs.
In 20 seconds, we will return you to Robert Heinlein's famous science fiction story, Requiem. A few words first concerning speed. In the era of rocket travel ahead, speed will be an important factor. But speed today can be the direct cause of sudden death on the nation's highways. As spring dissolves into summer, more and more people will be driving towards vacation lands, taking the family for Sunday spin. And more necessary will be the element of caution. Don't speed. Remember that accidents don't always happen to someone else. By speeding, they can happen to you. And now, back to our story.
Hey there!
Hello, stranger. Looking for something?
Looking for somebody.
Who?
Are you, James McIntyre?
What about it?
Hey, what's up, Mac?
Come here, Charlie.
What's the matter?
He'd be Charles Cummings, I guess.
So?
You have a spaceship here, and you're taking D.D. Harrison on a flight to the moon.
We haven't got a spaceship.
What are you keeping that big shed?
Strata yacht.
Where's Mr. Harrison?
Harrison?
Uh-huh.
Do you know anybody named Harrison, Charlie?
It's no use, Mac. We can't take off now. They know he's here.
You talk good sense, fella. Where's Harrison?
See that little tent over there?
Where?
There, right in back of you.
Oh, well, that one. Is he in there?
Yeah. Catch him, Mac.
Nice going, Charlie.
I hate it, so it was the only way.
Let's leave him here.
Oh, darn it, that's the finger I broke playing shortstop. I'm always hurting that finger.
Come on, we haven't any time. Get Pop into the cabin. Strap him into his hammock.
Right, can you tie up this guy?
In a jiffy.
Luna City, here we come.
How was it, Mac?
I'm all set. How's Mr. Harrison?
Mac, I don't think he'll live through the takeoff.
It's what he wants.
I know.
You better stay with him.
Right. Okay, Mr. Harrison?
Okay.
We're ready to take off.
Let me go over to the port. I want to watch the Earth.
No, you've got to stay in the hammock. All set?
All set.
Okay, Mac.
Here we go.
Mr. Harrison. I'm all right, Charlie.
Oh. I'm going up forward and see Mac. Going all right, Mac?
Going all right. Is he?
Yeah, he's alive. But he's in bad shape, Mac.
How bad?
A couple of cracked ribs, anyhow. I don't know what else. I don't know whether he'll last out the trip, Mac. His heart was pounding something awful.
He'll last, Charlie. He's tough.
Tough? He's delicate as a canary.
I don't mean that. He's tough way down inside.
Yeah. I better stay with him. We're on our way, Mr. Harrison.
can't I? Can't I move to a port now? Can't I watch the Earth now?
Oh, nothing to see yet. The blast hides it until we build up enough speed to coast up to the changeover point. Maybe if you're all right then, we'll move you to a port, but only if you're all right, because you see... Mr. Harrison.
Dad, look. Look, Dad, look.
Take it easy, Mr. Harrison.
Dad, look. Up in the sky. What's that up in the sky, Dad?
That's Halley's Comet, Ellis.
Where did it come from?
Oh, I don't know, son. Way out in the sky somewhere.
It's beautiful, Dad. It's beautiful. I want to touch it.
I'm afraid you'll never be able to touch it, son.
I want to touch it. I want to touch that beautiful thing up there in the sky.
Take it easy, Mr. Harrison. Take it easy.
Dallas, will you stop puttering with that machine and listen to me?
Oh, hello, Charlotte. I didn't know you were there.
I know you didn't. You never know I'm here. All you do is tinker and putter and work over that laboratory bench. I'd like to have it ripped out.
But didn't I show you in the papers, Charlotte? They've made a flight into the stratosphere.
We haven't been to the movies for 6 months.
Well, if they can reach the stratosphere, they can reach the moon. That's what I'm working on, Charlotte. It's big. It's important.
You never listen. I'm warning you, Dallas. You've got to choose between me and this laboratory.
Choose between you and the laboratory? Choose? But don't you see, I'm going to make a machine that will reach the moon.
Harrison, please, try to be quiet. Try to lie still there. We'll be at the changeover point soon.
She left me, Charlie. She left me.
Take it easy, Mr. Harrison.
It works. It works. I know this time the machine will work. I know this machine will reach the moon. I'm going to take off next month.
No, you're not, Mr. Harrison.
What do you mean, Doctor? My own machine, and I can't take it to the moon.
You'll have to get somebody else to take it to the moon, Mr. Harrison.
But this is my own machine. I want to take it to the moon. I want to touch the moon.
Mr. Harrison, we know enough about rocket ships to know that a man of your age with your weakened constitution cannot travel in them. You get somebody else to fly your ship to the moon. You stay on Earth.
But I've got to go. I've got to go. I've got to go.
Harrison, please. We've passed the changeover point.
I've got to go. I've got to go to the moon.
Oh, take it easy, Mr. Harrison. I'm going up front with Mac. Mac, I'm worried.
How is he?
Delirious. He keeps raving. I'm worried about the landing. You better set her down awful easy.
All right, I will. I'll ease her in on an involute approach curve.
All right, go ahead.
Here we go. Charlie, this is it.
We're landing, Mr. Harrison.
How is he, Charlie?
He's out.
Mr. Harrison. Well, he's breathing anyway. Let's get him out of the ship, Charlie.
Okay, you get the compressed air tanks out. I can handle him. He only weighs about 20 pounds, a little weight.
Right.
All right, Mr. Harrison, here we go. You wanted to get to the moon? Let me get those buckles unstrapped. There we are. Okay. Hey, Mac, get the door open, will you?
Right. You got this compressed air tank out. Okay, come on, Charlie. Bring him out.
Right.
You better set him down here on the ground.
Right.
Where am I? Is this the moon?
This is the moon, Mr. Harrison.
Look. Look in the sky. That moon up there, that's the Earth, isn't it?
That's the Earth, Mr. Harrison.
I made it. I'm on the moon. I'm looking back at the Earth.
You made it, Mr. Harrison.
I can die now. Got a pencil?
Here's a pencil.
Paper?
Paper, Mac.
Well, I haven't got paper.
That shipping tag. That shipping tag on the compressed air tank.
Here it is.
I've got to write. Then I can die.
I'll hold you up. Go ahead and write.
And when you bury me, put this over my grave.
We'll carve it in marble, Mr. Harrison.
No. No, leave it on the shipping tag. A shipping tag from a compressed air tank. That's what I want over my grave.
Write it, Mr. Harrison.
Under the wide and starry sky, dig my grave and let me lie. Glad did I live and gladly die. And I lay me down with a will. This be the verse you grave for me. Here he lies, where he longed to be. Home is the sailor, home from the sea. And the hunter, home from the hill.
You have just heard the first in a new series of science fiction stories, Beyond Tomorrow. In tonight's presentation, Requiem, Everett Sloan was featured in the role of D.D. Harrison. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Silverin, and John Campbell, Jr. was our program consultant.
Beyond Tomorrow, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from the 5th of April, 1950. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. Thanks for listening.